kind of woven into it. And I just want to talk. I don't want to overemphasize the stagecraft part of it, but you
or know, how funny it is,
or how funny it is. Hilarious.
extended.
I had to ice down various parts of my abdomen afterwards. I was laughing so hard. I had to medical.
Oh, that was you.
Yeah, it was me. Yeah.
Broke a rib. Didn't.
I'm suing the stage company for how hard I laughed.
That's what the Connecticut Lawyer's Desk book is doing here on the table.
Right. I'm just trying to find the right guy to handle this case, you know, because, listen, I'm going to own Michael Wilson's ass when this is over, all right?
Probably had to stand in line.
I knew I was throwing a fastball
anyway,
to somebody that they could park on that one. But it is pretty amazing. You guys are, they go off stage, and they come back in an entire different part of the theater, like 10 seconds later in a different costume. And I mean, there is one time when one of you goes off stage and then you come back in through the seats area.
Yeah, and there are many people off stage actually making that happen. We just actually step off stage and run, right. And they just follow us.
We're running as fast as we can, though.
Yeah.
They change our clothes, our hair, everything.
Yeah.
We just stand there.
You do bring them out for the curtain call, too. I know the tech crew comes out there.
Yes.
No.
That's so sweet.
We got to keep them happy.
Otherwise, they'll really...
And the show's written by Charles Ludlam. How much flexibility do you have to improvise or ad-lib? Or, I mean, it seems like some of the stuff is stuff that you guys are playing around with a little bit.
Well, I think we added a lot of little jokes in there that weren't in the original. I mean, just jokes with stuff that we found together. But, I mean, anytime anything goes wrong, and it does, because, you know, it's too crazy. There's too many things happening that, you know, we're allowed to sort of... a few extra lines here and there.
We also cut a lot. It was much longer.
Mm-hmm.
And I think just in
the whole World War II sequence, I know you've taken that out.
Well,
the whole sort of Saving Private Ryan.
It was lucky
thing.
That whole
and
Egypt
the wedding.
System, that whole Egypt section ended up in it, because we cut that down a lot.
It just, you know, it went on and on
like
and on.
React.
Yeah. And but it would also seem like it would be the kind of situation, because if you're immersed in that stuff, if you've seen all those movies, you're gonna find little things you're gonna want to riff on anyway. And but one thing that I was sort of wondering is, for younger audiences, have they seen all those movies? Do they get all that stuff? I mean, do people in their 20s resonate all this?
You know, I don't know if it resonates to for younger people in that way, but I think that everybody. I mean, comedy's universal. I just was at the school last week, the Watkinson School, and yeah. You know, many of the kids had seen the show, and they loved it, you know, because they got the stage craft, they got the humor of it, but they didn't really get all the references.
Yeah. David Hasselhoff was there the week before. They loved him, too.
We had to fight him over the stick.
Well, one thing that we've asked them to do here, and we should do it before they rebel, is a commercial for Uncle Ted's Lasagna. And I thought I would sort of write a commercial to their strength, because they're both transvestites, basically. I mean,
and but, who isn't, really?
Yeah, it's not as a lifestyle choice, but it's just, you know, it's what they do.
But we're no longer working on the street.
Yeah.
That's the good. Now we're at Hartford Stage.
So, Bobby, give them a little lasagna music, and let's see what they do. Go ahead, boys.
Darling. Let us go and see what Mrs. Danvers has made for dinner.
I gave Dandy the night off. I thought it was time, as mistress of Castle Mara, that I cook dinner for you.
What is Castle Mara?
That is the name of your house, my love.
Why don't we just call it the house?
We just don't.
What is this strange food?
Lasagna.
Never heard of it.
My lasagna is a complex sequence of many layers, gentle but sturdy. I did not always know this. I learned this in the lasagna workshop. I learned this from a woman who runs the lasagna workshop. A woman who believes in lasagnas. Who really sees lasagnas. Who helps women see their own lasagnas by seeing other women's lasagnas.
You don't even look as though you have a lasagna to call your own.
In the first session, the woman who runs the lasagna workshop asks us to draw a picture of our own unique, beautiful, fabulous lasagna. Well, that's what she called it. She wanted to know what our own unique, beautiful, fabulous lasagna looked like to us. I drew a huge red hyphen with little squiggly lines around it. Then I realized I had drawn the lasagna of your first wife, Redacta.
I told you to never speak of her or her lasagna.
In the workshop, we were asked to look at our lasagnas with hand mirrors. Then, after careful examination, we were to verbally report to the group what we saw. Until this point, everything I knew about lasagnas was based on hearsay. I had never really seen it. I found it quite unsettling at first. But My lasagna?
Not as unsettled as my stomach. Look, darling, from now on, if we're having lasagna, let's have Uncle Ted's lasagna. It's available in your grocer's freezer in a wide range of flavors from Daphne de Mozzarella to eggplant of the Baskervilles.
Yes, darling, yes. Make it Uncle Ted's lasagna when you'd like to keep your own lasagna ambiguous.
Bravo!
Bravo! I didn't know we were doing it with English accents.
Oh,
I
really?
Didn't do one.
I didn't know I was doing it with you.
Well, I guess we met somewhere in the war.
We didn't have much rehearsal time for this, actually.
That's the only male voice I have.
When you guys do the show, by the way, the people that you just heard, if you're just tuning in wondering what actually happened to our radio show, are the cast members from The Mystery of Irma Vep, currently playing at the Harper Stage Company. Are the audiences different from night to night? I mean, I would think with a show like this, you'd have some audiences you can get them going and some audiences that's going to sit there glaring at you? Or
It really only takes two people to get the whole audience going. Two people who really can, you know, who are really getting the joke.
Yeah.
And then it kind of tips everybody else off. But if they don't show up,
yeah, we're in trouble. A lot of times, though, people will sit there and try to make sense of it, and it really doesn't make any sense.
Right.
They're going to be disappointed if they all the dots connect.
That's right.
But the great thing about Charles Ludlam was that he was such an incredible entertainer,
mm-hmm.
and he stole from every place. You know, he stole from all these old movies and all, you know, and he really didn't care about whether things added up or not. He just wanted to entertain people.
Entertain, right.
The night that I was there also, it seemed like there was a big difference. I don't know if this happens every night, but a big difference between the first act and the second act. The second act, the audience just ignited.
A couple of drinks in the lobby.
Or I wondered if they go down in the lobby and they kind of conferred about it. They said, and somebody said,
I think
no.
That it did.
It doesn't
make the big confusion has been in the lobby. The people that they've been overhearing is that people can't figure out whether there are four actors or two.
Yeah.
Because they have these double bios. So if you're listening to this program, there are two.
We've ruined it for you.
Yeah.
No, but it's good that they know, because we're working really hard. So they should know it's only two.
Yeah. Well, listen, if that's the biggest problem they're having out in the lobby, that's pretty good.
No, it's good. But I think a lot of it is spent, people are trying to figure out how many actors are in the play, and then they come back in the second act and they know.
Actually, when they did the Richard Foreman play, they had people stationed out in the lobby trying to keep people from believing. So, you know, I mean, that's like... were you there yet, LaFleur, during that... They did a Richard Foreman play, and it was one of these really difficult experimental plays, and somebody from the Harper Stage Company, they took turns doing it, and the job was actually called goalie. And they had to stand out in the lobby, and not exactly keep people from leaving, but sort of try to persuade people to go back in and give it a second chance and kind of open their minds up a little bit to it. Like
we've never had to resort to that so far, anyway.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's an experimental thing. It's more challenging material and stuff like that. I mean, if you've seen any movies from the 40s, you're probably going to like the show or get it or understand it and stuff like that. So you don't need a background in the arts or anything. The show's called The Mystery of Irma Vep. We're going to visit with these guys, James Lacine and Jeffrey Roberson, a little bit more when we come back. But don't bother calling in to talk to them because we haven't given them headphones. We don't feel they're ready for that responsibility yet. Anyway, we'll take a break and we shall return.
Ils donnent parfois rancard à sa bonne étoile.
It's really getting to be nail-biting time now as we get close to the Super Bowl and begin to ponder the question, what will happen? Will the great defensive line of the Carolina Panthers, anchored by Ted Washington, Richard Seward, be able to...
Yeah, okay. That's the first time Louis has been on the deck.
I've seen Louis on the deck a couple of times.
It's time for Sport à Trois, a very boring French discussion, football, sports, Super Bowl segment. Avec Monsieur Arnaudin, Monsieur Bruce Stevens, and myself, Louis Gascon de la Mer.
No, but we have something something better than the Super Bowl today.
What's that?
Driving with Vic.
Driving with Vic?
Yeah. Victor Petrenko.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
What is it about that sport?
I don't know. How are they able to do all those things when they're hammered? I mean, you know, they're up there just twirling around and flipping around. I mean, you know, I can't even skate sober. And these guys are stinking drunk every moment of their lives.
I don't think it's quite that dire.
Triple axles and stuff, but then they can't get behind the wheel of anything that has axles.
I saw a sign.
Usually their triple axles are on somebody's lawn.
I saw a sign in the locker room, don't drink and skate. So they know.
The people at Simsbury must spend their entire lives just diving out of the way of these guys.
Look, here comes another one.
I mean, really, it's like living in Chechnya or something. You know?
Oh,
life is not worth a plugged nickel anywhere near that skating center. Woo!
The danger is in the parking lot.
I really am kind of almost puzzled by this because you wouldn't. Well, of course it's Russians, you know, and they like to knock a few back.
Well, let's face it. If you grew up in Russia, you probably would knock back your share too.
Right.
You'd be drunk all the time.
There aren't a lot of Irish figure skaters either. Well, by the time we're waiting for the pond to freeze, you know, we're drunk anyways. Can't even get the skates on. I don't know. They're the ones. I mean, I guess that's the drinking figure skating thing. Scott Hamilton doesn't get drunk all the time, does he?
No. Well, we don't know. Well, he's not Russian.
Yeah. No, that's what I'm saying. I mean, the other figure skaters, Brian Boitano.
That's right.
What would Brian Boitano do?
You'll see Dick Button sauced.
But, you know, the funny thing is there are a lot of hockey players who have that problem, too.
Yes.
And you know how many have died in traffic accidents, right. That sort of thing. Yeah.
Some mailboxes have taken some wicked pounding.
Well,
they're just so freaking cold. They spend their whole lives on the ice, you know. Maybe they're trying to get warmed up. Or something. It doesn't really work, though. All right. No. Can I just say one thing about the Super Bowl?
Sure.
Do you have to?
With each passing year, it does seem that the football part of the Super Bowl is more meaningless than
That's right.
You wouldn't have thought it would be possible. But so what you wind up with is the biggest, most important sports event in the entire universe, except that nobody cares how it comes out. Barely anyone could tell you who won last year. I have no idea.
Who cares?
Yeah, it doesn't matter.
Who cares who wins this year?
I remember the commercials, though. I mean, the freaking beer frogs are going to be more interesting than, you know.
No, it's absolutely true. It's more and more in the background. But it is huge. As a matter of fact, the CBS people are saying, look, we want a close game. It doesn't matter who wins. And even if it's not a close game, it's still going to be one of the top 10 in TV this week. So we're not worried.
No, well, I mean...
I'm sorry.
We're having headphone problems.
No, it's not headphones. It's we just went off the air.
Oh, yeah. I'm having brain problems. But if you're like Buddy Vicevich and you're getting messages on your feelings, there's not much that Dr. Jerry can do for you. But if you're just scared of going to the dentist, I've got a great solution. It's Dr. Jerry Rosenfeld. That's right, Dr. Jerry Rosenfeld, right there in Avon. He specializes in people who are afraid of the dentist. He's so dedicated to making the experience a very comfortable one. He provides headphones with a personal choice of music. Bring in the chieftains. Bring in the wolf tones. He works on your teeth. You listen to the music. The future of dentistry has changed. The already high standards of care have been raised with the new breakthrough technology, the new dental laser. Welcome to the comfort zone. No drill, no noise, no numbness, no little people. Just Dr. Jerry Rosenfeld being delighted to offer you the dental laser, quicker and quieter. It's the state of the art, and it replaces the drill in most instances. Over 20 years of teaching and hands-in-the-mouth experience, now he's got the water laser, too. Exceptional dentistry, maximum comfort, bridges, crowns, bleach, and bond, and doesn't matter. Your care and comfort are the chief priority of Dr. Rosenfeld and his staff, Linda and Magdalena. Call 674-0707 for an appointment with a smile you've always wanted in the warm and relaxed atmosphere that spells success. Most insurance is accepted, located in Old Avon Village on Route 44 and Avon at the sign of the Silver Toothbrush. Easy parking in some evening hours. So call Dr. Jerry, the dentist who caters to cowards. Call today at 674-0707. Or we could talk about a sperm whale that exploded. Which, you know, although it's kind of interesting, and it would be news you could use if you did have if you happen to have a dead sperm whale in your possession, it's probably something you should know about, but the average person probably doesn't care.
It blew up in town, didn't it?
Yeah, a decomposing sperm whale has exploded while being transported through a Taiwan city, splattering cars and shops with blood and blubber. We're following this story. We're sending Steve Kotz.
Following it?
Yeah. So we're sending Steve
Kotz. What is it to follow?
Well, just to see, the backlash, the aftermath. The aftermath of the backlash, which is considered to be the afterlash.
Right.
But, in general, because of the natural decomposing process, a lot of gases accumulate. Uh-huh. And when the pressure buildup gets too great, the whale can explode. So if you have a dead sperm whale in your possession right now, you should be aware of the fact that either you need to bleed the gas out of it from time to time.
Yeah. Or it could go at any second.
Yeah, just, you know, take, when there's usually a valve on the side of the whale and a little brass valve, and just bleed the gas out from time to time, or take your chances. Don't smoke around the whale.
Didn't see that on Free Willy.
What did you just say? What was your advice?
I should just be, you know, be careful.
Don't smoke. I would say no, don't smoking, yeah. Or, and don't even use a cell phone too close to the whale, because that could
just a spark could set it off.
Spark right there, yeah. So that's that. That's the news that you can use.
Didn't see that with Keiko.
Yeah. David Kay did not find any dead sperm whales in Iraq. So that's another weapon
of
mass destruction they don't have, yeah. I mean, just, you know, to say, basically, we were, how did he put it? We were all wrong, most of us all wrong, probably. He tends to qualify what he says a lot, but when he really says, it turns out we were all wrong, probably, in my judgment, and that is most disturbing. Well, yeah, but I mean, that's sort of incredible to say something like that, and to say something that sweeping, even though he keeps qualifying him by saying things like probably and in my judgment. But
yeah.
And then for the administration, basically, it's like he was their chief guy. He's the guy who's supposed to go find all this crap, and it's not there, and he says so, and they act like he's, you know.
They've really done well addressing this, too.
That's what I'm saying. I mean, you know, first of all, Cheney is a pumphead. There's something wrong with his brain, actually. I actually think he doesn't get a lot of this stuff. But I don't think you can chalk the rest of this up to incompetence. And, you know, in some respects, the most important thing that Kay said was not that they were all wrong, because we already knew that. And we already knew that none of this stuff was
don't
there.
Don't stay on the breezy to windy side
and
tonight,
not only that, but Bob
that
Cox is talking
about the
headphones in an attempt to silence me, okay? Don't tell me he's not working for the administration. The most important thing that he said, and it's buried in the New York Times.
Fury. That would have gone on for 20 minutes.
Yeah, exactly. You never would have stopped it either. By the way, doesn't it seem to you that the term bird flu is kind of funny? And it's a bird
flu?
Yeah, and people keep talking about bird flu. Well, that's what birds do.
So funny, those
million
chickens
or whatever. It's moving very quickly. I feel flushed right now, and I think I may have bird flu. I may have the first one. Have any human beings gotten bird flu?
I don't think so.
All right.
But I may be the first.
It's
only something you want to get.
All right.
Start flapping your arms and stuff.
Here at the end of the New York Times article, David Kay says, and he does have that bad habit of just kind of too many parenthetical expressions, but he says, I must say, in my personal view, and it's purely personal, is that this case you will finally determine that it is going to take an outside inquiry, both to do it and to give yourself and the American people the confidence that you have done it. It being get to the bottom of it.
Yeah.
And I think he's right. I think that there's no choice. What we really have here, no matter how you slice this thing up, you have the commitment of American troops to a preemptive, unilateral, you know, invasion of a country.
Over 500 of them dead, too, by the way.
Yeah, a lot more Iraqis dead. Based on, and not that Saddam Hussein was a great guy or that he didn't deserve to get taken out, because he did, but that's not why we did it. We did it because President Bush scared the pants off of everybody, saying this guy has weapons, he's going to use them against us, and those weapons aren't there, and they were never there, and, you know, we've got this massive multi-billion-dollar intelligence apparatus. But apparently, I mean, this is like the most important thing to find out in the world at that moment was, what has he got and is he going to use them against us? And either they're the biggest bunch of chuckleheads who ever lived, or the people who were vetting this stuff didn't do a very good job. I don't know. It's troubling. It is troubling. If I were running for president as a Democrat in 2004, I would make this a big issue. And the other thing I would make a big issue of, and this is what I was going to ask Stanley Greenberg, except we ran out of time. And I did a crappy job with the interview anyway, but I still think the deficit is a big issue. You know, Ross Perot was a whack job, but he was also kind of brilliant. I mean, he was the only guy who's ever been able to make the deficit a real issue. This idea that, this weird thing about the fact that Reagan and Bush Sr. and Bush Jr., none of them are what they say they are. They are not fiscally responsible people. They spend tons of money. They cut taxes, and then they spend the same amount of money as if they still hadn't cut taxes. they run these gigantic debts that they expect other people to deal with. And you know, there are a lot of people who joined the Republican Party because they wanted fiscal sanity. They wanted a government that behaved responsibly instead of acting like some sailor on shore leave. And I'm just sort of amazed that nobody runs on this issue and runs against these people based on what bad administrators they are. All right, I'm done.
All right. Phone numbers.
Go take a little break.
We do, yes. The numbers are 5-2.